Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
And welcome back to Scarred for Life, the podcast where we open up old wounds by looking back at the films that scared us as kids. I'm Terry.
And I'm Mary Beth.
In each episode, our special guest brings with them a movie that traumatized them as a child.
This week, our guest is Nicole Goble, the host of the Bodies of Horror podcast on the Anatomy of a Scream Network, where every 2 weeks, she and a guest dive into the films that exist at the intersection of disability and horror. Welcome to the show!
Hello! Thank you so much for having me.
I had the recent joy of being on your show, so I'm so glad that you're here on our show now, because yes. Your podcast is awesome, and I had such a great time talking about The Taking of Deborah Logan with you.
Yes. Ooh. A very different yeah.
But for our listeners who maybe aren't familiar with your podcast, can you tell us a little bit more about it? I know I gave a little bit of a log line in your intro, but can you tell us a little bit more about the podcast?
Sure. So Bodies of Horror is a biweekly podcast that looks at various horror films through the lens of disability. So we're looking at films that have, you know, obviously characters with disabilities, either explicit or sometimes we go coded, and disability related themes as well. So we cover a whole smorgasbord of kind of related topics, but all through the lens of disability and looking at all kinds of horror. We've done your classics. We did Freaks. Because, I mean, obviously, yeah, you kind of have to if you're doing disability right. And horror. And Frankenstein all the way to The Taking of Deborah Logan. So, yeah, a whole kind of swath of different stuff. So, yeah, that's Bodies of Horror.
So I'm curious, how did you come up with this idea? Because I think particularly with the horror genre, it's such an interesting topic because whether we're talking about mental or physical disabilities, there's been a lot of history of horror that hasn't necessarily done well by that. So I'm curious how how you came about this subject and decided to turn it into a podcast.
Well, honestly, it's, I guess, from a really young age, horror has had a huge meaning to me in how I've related and how I've talked about my disability. I have used kind of the phrase a handful of times on the podcast, like horror films have kind of become a language for me to talk about my experiences with disability, because from a young age, there were things that I didn't know how to articulate. And I would see a horror film and be like, ooh, there's something about this and it's interesting and I can use this to, you know, show my mom and be like, I feel like this sometimes. Yeah, so it kind of got, I guess, the seed planted there. But like you said, physical disability and mental health, horror is a really interesting genre because it never shies away from talking about all of the complicated facets of these things. And in doing so, sometimes it hits some really interesting marks and says something really powerful. And then sometimes it's not great. But there's still a lot to kind of take away and talk about, because I think those are just as, I think, potent representations.
I'm curious, since you've gone through a number of films throughout time, I'm curious, have you seen a change in the way disabilities are reflected in horror films, or is there still a lot of work to do?
Oh, sure. I mean, I think horror has a unique way of being very reflective of society in certain kind of cultural touch points at various times. All films kind of do that, but I think horror does it in a very interesting and special way.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, I think that depending on some of the conversations and some of the movements and things that are associated with disability that are happening, you can kind of see some of that reflected. You know, in talking about the taking of Deborah Logan, one thing that I've seen so much more discussed now is the intersection of age and disability. So Alzheimer's and other kind of age-related conditions and diseases, we're starting to see more and more kind of horror films talk about them and talk about them from a place of not just the individual, but also the family, the caregivers, and how it's more of that community of care around them and the impacts that these conditions can have. And so obviously, as we learn more about ourselves, our bodies, how they work, new diseases every day, you know, that all has different, I think, ramifications in how down the line it will play in horror. I'm really interested in how the pandemic will end up really being reflected. There's obviously films that have touched on it, but I think that that's still to come. And so it'll be really interesting to see how that's impacted.
Well, I remember when we talked about the taking of Deborah Logan, not to keep referencing our discussion that Terry was not a part of, but we had a really good conversation about the representation of caregivers and the experience of caregiving too. And I think that is such an interesting, like you mentioned, like the intersection of looking at community and disability and like what caregiving looks like and the effects of caregiving. And I think there really is such an expansion of what horror is showing and being more open to talking about. I feel like disability is not as hidden, I feel like, as in previous like iterations and decades of genres. But I'm curious from your perspective, like, what are some of your favorite movies in terms of representing disability in the horror space? Like, are there any that you really think are like prime examples of that?
So an interesting one that I actually saw recently and talked about on the podcast, I'm a little hazy on when I would have seen it originally. I think I had seen the entire thing, but I can't be for sure. Monkey Shines.
I've actually never seen Monkey Shines.
It goes to some places, but what I found really fascinating about that was that it was hitting on a few different topics that are for that time, were not as explicitly discussed. It was a film that was actually boycotted by a disability rights organization. They hadn't seen the movie. They were boycotting the imagery behind it, like the poster art, because I think especially it was the image of like a toy monkey in a wheelchair.
Huh.
I remember like reading a lot about it. I was really like familiar with the work of the group, and watching the film, I'm like, there's some interesting stuff here. I think we've come a long way in certain discussions, but no, it has some really interesting scenes of parental relationships when you depend on a parent, when you're an adult and you depend on a parent for care, how that alters and shakes and shifts that relationship, romantic relationships, how if you've gone through some kind of accident, sudden illness, that can be a huge blow to a relationship, and it can make you feel really shaky in terms of how you define yourself in that space. So I actually really, really like it for I think those components but also films like A Quiet Place, I think, is amazing because it's a disabled actor. And it's in a world where her disability isn't kind of like her Achilles heel. It's an interesting structure, and especially when you pair that with the sequel and you realize that this was a family that had communicated via sign language primarily together, and, you know, just that kind of inclusive element, I thought is really cool. And I think that that's something, especially that we're seeing more and more now, is disabled actors actually playing disabled characters.
I would just love to know how you got into horror in general. I know you said that horror like really helped give you kind of a language to talk about like your experiences, but how did you get introduced to the genre?
So I have an older sister, as these stories tend to go.
Yep.
And I remember she would babysit me occasionally, and she would have some friends over, and they would watch movies. And when our living room was set, like, we grew up in a really small house. So, like, it was just this big open doorway between the living room and the kitchen. And there was one little space that I could sit by the stove, have a view of the TV, but if I got too scared, I could just, like, slowly turn and I would be okay. And I was able to hide from my sister and she would know I was there sometimes. And so it was a win-win. And I saw lots of movies that way. Also, just, it was always a big treat when we would go to, like, I don't know, the city, like Des Moines or something. And when we would go and visit relatives.
Where did you grow up?
So I grew up in Southwest Iowa. So
I live in Nebraska.
Okay. Yeah. So I grew up in the little corner kind of between Nebraska and Missouri.
Okay.
So when we would take trips, we'd be like, oh, we get to go and rent movies. And I would just be transfixed by like the box art. And I would always talk my sister into like renting like something super scary and then hiding so I could watch it. But yeah, so it was a lot of that. And then once I got a little bit older, you know, stuff would pop up on cable and I kind of started going down my own little routes of discovering different horror films for myself.
I tell you, older siblings are the best. I was the older sibling.
I wouldn't say my sister was the best, but I learned so much from her.
How much older? What's the age difference between the two of you?
She's 6 years older.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
That's kind of like my age, because I was 8 years older. I'm 8 years older than my brother. So that's like the perfect age to where they're watching more adult movies and then little kids can maybe join in on the fun.
Yeah. But it was really interesting because like my mom, you know, at some point, my sister was never really like, she watched, like, it's what you would watch when you would have friends over, you know, your slumber party fare. But when I started really getting into horror, like, my mom would watch it with me. Like, I remember watching Nightmare on Elm Street 2 one night with her while, like, folding the laundry. And she's like, oh, she's like, this is a film that we have watched and it is great. And I'm like, this is the best movie ever. I'm like, I never want to ride the bus again. So scary.
So, what was the first horror movie you ever saw?
That's a good question. I want to say maybe Friday the 13th. That sounds about right.
I mean, it's always so hard to like think back, but like, is that the one that you remember particularly?
I think that's like the first one that I remember like actually like watching at a really, really young age. We got this big box. We had this neighbor that moved and they had this big box of VHS tapes. These were copied movies. I think some were caught. I don't think any were actually copied from TV. Like these were all like just copied from somewhere.
Yep.
A bunch of them were not labeled.
Oh, and hell yeah. Very found footage movie starting.
I know. And for some reason, this was fine with my mom. My mom's like, yeah, okay. Box of unmarked VHS tapes.
Pop them in the VHS player.
That is a dangerous roulette game right there.
Yeah. I remember Friday the 13th being on that. And I know that Slumber Party Massacre was on there.
Okay.
And I'm going to mess up the name. Psychomania, which is about a group of zombie bikers.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever heard of that one.
Yeah. Something like Psychomania. I'm probably forgetting the title, but that really stood out to me too. But, you know, if you have someone that is kind enough to give you a huge box of unmarked tapes, adventure is yours.
Adventure is yours.
Oh, shit. I love a time where we just popped in an unmarked VHS tape and we're just like, yeah, it's fine. Who fucking knows? It'll be great. Nothing weird could be on us at all.
Yeah.
And then sometimes you find something that is not a movie in the normal sense.
Thankfully, that never happened. And it was actually like a pretty good array. Like there were like the original Bedazzled was on there. And I remember thinking that was kind of a hot jam.
Your neighbor had good taste.
It was wild. He was a cop. So there were so many possibilities of how this could go. And it was fine. It was fine.
So what kind of horror did you kind of gravitate to as a kid? Did you have like a certain subgenre or type of horror that you enjoyed watching?
I think that I started, I think when I was really kind of under the tutelage of my sister, we were pretty straight and narrow slasher fare.
Okay.
But then once I started like actually exploring different films on my own, definitely went towards body horror.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
What do you remember like some of the body horror movies that you would gravitate towards?
The Fly was Cronenberg was huge. Society.
Oh man.
Yeah. I watched that at a ridiculous age and I still don't understand it. But yeah, like body horror was really a thing and something that I still really, I think, lean into, especially because I think from a disability perspective, I think it's just a really rife subgenre for that kind of discussion.
Yeah.
And it's really exciting now to see, you know, I think there's, you know, you've got the Cronenbergs who really, I think, create kind of story and worlds around body horror that incorporate it. And it's very interesting and kind of textured and layered. And then you also have body horror that's just like, hey, let's see some organs. so, yeah. But Cronenberg was definitely like a huge entry point for me and them.
Well, what's your favorite body horror now? I mean, besides, obviously Cronenberg is still a favorite, I'm assuming, but like, what are other body horror films that you've really found and loved as like in the subgenre?
Honestly, films like Raw, I think are so great.
Oh, yes.
Because again, it's using body horror in such a compelling way. I think that director's work is phenomenal. Because obviously very much in keeping with that idea of just complicated relationships with our bodies and identity. It's all very interesting. But, you know, Cronenberg's son, Brandon, I think has really came in and I think followed his dad's path a bit and then kind of framed it a little bit to really be talking more specifically about identity, which I really love exploring too. So yeah, those are,
I think
now is a really interesting and cool time for body horror. I like seeing the various corners that we're exploring.
Yeah. Going back to when you were a kid, and I know you mentioned this with like Nightmare on Elm Street too. Were you a scared kid? Like, were you easily scared watching horror movies?
I'm gonna say no, but I absolutely was. Because I had night terrors.
Oh, okay.
It was always the same one when I was really young. Like, when I was really, like, getting really into horror, and that was, like, what I wanted to watch all the time. I had the same nightmare of Freddy, Jason, Michael Myers, Chucky. Like, Chucky was always, like, a low-key fave because he was the one that I was like, you know what? I don't think I could take Chucky in a fight, but it would be so much more even matched. And that excited me because I'm like, I have a chance.
I could take Chucky.
But I always had this nightmare of, like, the whole crew. I would wake up, my bed was underneath a window, and I had the same nightmare. I'd wake up, and they would all be standing outside my window.
Wow.
Then they would just all smile at me and walk right to our front door, which I could see from my window, because it was just right there. And by the time I could get out of bed and run, they were inside, and they had killed my mom and my sister.
Jesus.
So that was my nightmare.
That's actually horrifying.
Fuck that.
Yeah.
How, and did that go on for a while?
Yeah. I had like variations of that dream for like until I think I was like 12 or 13.
Holy shit.
Oh wow.
My God.
Yeah. It was.
And all of them? That's fucked up. Jesus.
They're all getting in on it.
Good Lord.
Yeah. Because, I mean, we grew up in, like, rural area. We didn't lock our doors. And so I'd be like, oh, no, our door's not locked. They can come in. And so I would try to get out of bed and get down the hallway, and they would be inside, and they had made their way to.
Oh, my God. Good God.
Damn.
Yeah.
It's always those things where you're like, I wasn't scared, but then when I went to bed, my subconscious let the fear go very quickly. Yeah. That's nuts. Oh my God.
So wow.
Therapy. Wow. It's good. It works.
Yeah.
Do it.
Do you get scared now as an adult watching horror movies?
Not really. I think we can all kind of be unsettled by something.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you can usually turn that off a little bit and have some kind of feeling of not all consumed, can't sleep, clowns will eat me. So, but I think it all depends too on the situation.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I'm, you know, at home by myself, dark night, weird sounds, it's going to be a little bit spookier. I may get a little more jazzed up, but yeah, I don't think I necessarily get scared.
Can you remember the last movie though that did scare you or that reminded you of being a kid?
That reminded me of being a kid?
Watching a horror movie or that feeling?
That's a really great question. I think the last movie that I remember like feelingly scared was probably The Strangers.
Okay. That's a good one. That one's terrifying.
I think you're going to be really hard pressed to find people that aren't unsettled by home invasion, someone sneaking into your home, things like that. So it's unsettling. And I think that it's also just kind of gets at those root things. And I would say that that's probably one that whenever I watch, and kind of go back to that place. And it reminds me also of being a kid and that fear of, oh, my door isn't locked and bad things will happen.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
That is a good one. Okay, Nicole, we have talked about your horror history and your podcast, but what movie did you bring with you today? Your Scarred for Life pick.
I brought Dr. Giggles.
You sure fucking did. And for the unfamiliar, Dr. Giggles, this madman who believes he's a doctor comes to the town where his crazy father was killed and soon begins murdering people and becoming infatuated with a teenage girl who has a heart condition.
Boy, this movie.
Boy, howdy.
I have a feeling I know one of the parts that might have jumped out at you as a kid, but I have to know. Take us back. How old were you? How did you see this movie? What about it scared you? Give us your horror story.
Okay. So I saw this one. This was a rental. This was a slumber party, a couple of friends over thing. However, I was introduced to the magic the mystery, the mayhem of Diggs. I went to a movie. Diggs. So we had a movie theater in the small town that was near us. And it was like one of those kind of almost like second run theaters where it's like family movies that have been out for 2 years. Mm-hmm. And it is the theater that will continue to play them and only play Muppets Christmas in the right. month of December. But I remember going to a movie there and seeing the poster because they always had posters for stuff that they would never show, which was ridiculous to me. I could not conceptualize this. But I remember seeing this poster and a little rhyme. If you live in Moor High and you get sick, get down on your knees and pray you die quick. And I was like, Dr. Giggles, I'm like, this sounds wild. I will see it someday. And then I did. That was my kind of like intro. But yeah, when I was in middle school, I was part of a consolidated school district. And so we all went to like these different super small elementaries, and then we came together in like middle school and high school. It was my first time being around this other group of kids because I had grown up in a like when we moved to Iowa because I was born in Nebraska.
Oh, okay.
We lived in a neighboring town, and so I went to elementary there, and then I got to be with the actual. Then we moved towns, and then I went to school with the other kids when I was in middle school. So Dr. Giggles was interesting because these girls that I was just getting to know, they're like, oh, well, why don't you bring a movie for us to watch? And I was like, cool. So I'm like, I'm going to be the most awesome person and they're going to love me. So I rented this movie because I had also in reading like box or something about it, it said that, you know, it's about a heart surgeon, and I have a heart condition. I would have to go on heart monitors for periods of time for like testing, just like in the movie. And so I was like, oh, this is going to be really cool. And I can use this to kind of be like, yeah, so this is why I have a heart monitor sometimes.
Wow. That's a lot going into this, just even without what happens in the movie. That's a lot. Because, like, that is an important part of this movie. And it's also kind of horrifying when you think about it. So you wanted to impress these girls. You took this movie.
Yeah.
What happened?
Well, we watched it. And they did not appreciate the nuance. The subtlety, the nuance of what
so much subtlety in this movie.
Yeah. So, no, I mean, they were kind of like, why? Like, why did you, like, what is this movie? And did you need to bring it? Why did you bring it? Because you could have just, like, talked to us about things. And we wouldn't have had to watch this. But I'm like, yeah, but we've learned so much by doing this. And are we even better friends?
We didn't come together after this. They didn't join us together.
No, and I wasn't able to take movies over there for a while. Not until in high school when people would come over to my place to watch movies. And then I would be like, you have no say.
No choice. No agency. I will subject you to whatever the fuck I want.
Yeah. But
my house, my rules.
When I would be invited, they're like, and you bring chips.
So, were there other movies that you guys watched that night, or was this like the movie for the night?
No, this was the movie for the night. Yeah,
that is amazing. Do you remember in particular like the scene that like you lost them on?
I mean, I think the scene that really took some of them out was the reenactment of him coming out of his mom's corpse. They're like, no. They're like, that, what is that? What is happening? And I was just really like, the scene that I struggled the most with was when she takes the heart monitor and puts it in the fish tank those things are so expensive, and you can't do that. Like, these are hooked up to sensors, and the doctors will be mad, and then they will kill you. Like, then any doctor will kill you.
Then it doesn't have to be Dr. Giggs. It can be any doctor.
Yeah, any surgeon. They, like, they probably would have been like, well, you need to have this valve replacement now, but we're not going to do it because you fucked up your monitor, so... You don't respect the machinery. We don't respect your machinery. We bid you good day.
It does make sense. I get why that moment would traumatize you, but I do think it's very funny that we have a scene in which a kid is literally ripping himself out of his mom's belly, and this is the scene that, like, affected you.
Yeah. Love it really that. Did.
That's hilarious.
I thought about it a lot. But yeah, the corpse thing was really, I think, the deal breaker for... The other people, they were like, no, this is not.
Not cool.
This is not it.
Yeah, this is not the film that we thought.
I mean, it has such a happy title, Dr. Giggles. Like, it could be in another universe. This is like an Eddie Murphy, Professor Doolittle type of movie in another universe.
Imagine if they remake it and they go that route. What?
You have one ticket at least right now. I'm ready to see it.
You make it like John Mulaney. What would that be like? Like, not so much giggling, more just like uncomfortable processing, which probably would have benefited Giggs at some point.
You know, it probably would have. Although I have to say that I loved his giggle in this movie. His giggle.
It's really good.
Is a plus.
And it's shockingly natural.
Like, yeah.
If it doesn't feel like nothing about this movie is natural, but that's like the most natural.
There's a lot you could say about this movie, but I have to say that Larry Drake's performance as Dr. Giggles is a plus. Oscar worthy performance.
So good.
It's fantastic.
And like the giggle that he like can make without moving, like even moving his mouth. It's just like, he's just so creepy. And the way he's able to deliver like, have a heart and throw a heart at someone deadpan and just like complete. It's just the vibes are so weird in this movie, and he just encapsulates how weird the vibes are so well.
Exactly.
And I adore it. Like, he's just going full, like, this is ridiculous, and we're gonna just go with it. And I appreciate that about his performance so much.
Yeah. And sometimes, like, it is interesting because there are times where he delivers. There's, I don't know, you stop counting after like 6,000, but there's at least that many medical puns.
I will say, I started writing them down and I quit because I was like, there's too many. I was writing them down. Cutting edge of medicine, let's open this baby up. Like, there, just, where's the other one? Laughter's the best medicine, checkout time. The lines are great, but there was so many that I was like, I can't write them all down.
Yeah, but some of them he delivers in like a perfect deadpan of whatever. And then there are some that he's like, all right, I'm saying this because I truly would. I'm being that person right now, and I'm going to fuck with you. So I appreciate the range.
Well, especially when he pulls out like the medical instruments that he's made, like his fucked up, like this is like low rent dead ringers. Like, maybe I thought of dead ringers with like the fucked up doctors with their weird medical devices that are just like torture devices. And he just brings them out.
No spoilers. I haven't watched it yet.
Well, it's not really a spoiler. It's like the consent. It's like the conceit of the whole movie. But the way that he delivers the lines when he's about to kill someone and like he knows he's hamming it up is just so good. Like when it is the woman with the heart condition's father's girlfriend, and he's like, pump it out, and like pumps her stomach, and it's just so, and like on top of that, the kills in this are fucking brutal. Like, so different. They really commit to the doctor bit so well in how the kills, I will say. Like, the kills in this are a fucking plus.
Well, and what's interesting about the medical devices is that they're not, like, these completely wacky things. Like, they're just exaggerated versions of actual tools.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, I think for me, like, as a kid with a disability, going to the doctor was fucking horrifying.
Yeah.
Because you have no autonomy. You usually don't know what you're going to be in store for. You just know that it's going to be uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And you're going to be poked, prodded, and whatever. And I think on a logical level, you trust the doctors and you trust your guardian, your parents, whomever is with you to keep you safe and nothing bad will happen. But there's always that it's horrifying. That the simplest tool can be really horrifying when you're a kid and you don't know what it's going to do, where it's going to go. This film actually does, I think, a really interesting way of playing with that, with these tools, because they're what you would see anywhere, but they're just this exaggerated death version of them.
Well, and I also think this film handles, and I'm curious, Nicole, your perspective on this, but like on how, like, Jennifer, how they tackle Jennifer's heart condition and how they do have her like throwing the heart monitor into the tank and showing her frustration and showing her going to the doctor multiple times and how it really affects her life. I think we don't really see horror movies grapple with that, especially from the 80s like this, and like how they kind of, you know, it's not perfect, but in showing her having that disability and not just, you know, and again, like they use it for some weird shit at the end in terms of like the mom and him felt like it's all very strange, but at the same time, it's like interesting how they have her, especially the teenage girl, having more of that depth as like the final girl of a horror movie. It's interesting.
Yeah, I think on a very specific level, I think it does go to places that you don't typically see in terms of, like, especially as a teenager, it's you, like, you just want to have friends and
yeah,
fit in. Not necessarily, like, you just want to have, like, your groups and feel good about yourself and feel like you aren't, I don't know, especially with a disability, that you're not just this weirdo.
Mm-hmm.
You see this, I think, explained and kind of played with in a couple of different ways. One is in her relationship with her boyfriend, because she can't drink, she can't have sex, and this is what you teenagers must do in horror films.
Especially in horror movies.
Yeah, you just have to. And she's like, no, she only does that for like 5 minutes. But she's very committed for those 5 minutes. That's hard, because there were certain things that I couldn't do that sucked and that I felt like was a drain. And even now, you know, COVID is kind of like a flashback to all of that, to where it's being immunocompromised. I have lived a very kind of different existence than some of my friends. But I think there's that component dealing with, like, there are things that I want to do. I want to, you know, do these things that kids my age are doing and I can't, and that's a struggle. And then also, I think the physical aspects of, like, the heart monitor. She has a couple of lines about, you know, I've got this new fashion accessory and like, I had a feeding pump in high school and I wore it in a backpack and it was there and annoying. And again, it was just something that made me feel like I stuck out even more and was a thing that I had to navigate and worry about, like, where it was, what it was doing. So I like that it actually does at least touch on it. I don't, it's Dr. Giggles. It doesn't, it's not trying to write a journal article about it, but I'm happy that it's at least folded into the character.
We have a disabled final girl, which is pretty cool. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, a final girl with a disability. Like, I love that shit. It's just cool. It's just cool to see that, especially in the 80s. Like, yeah, it's not going to be perfect, but it did something that not a lot of movies were doing. And it's Dr. fucking Giggles. You know, like, it's this movie that, like, is inherently ridiculous, but we have, like, we're grappling with disability a little bit more in depth than most other movies. And I'm like, you know what, Dr. Giggles? Not a bad movie. Like, between the camp and the kills, it's actually pretty good. I had a great time watching this movie. It's really fun.
It is a lot of fun. And I do remember, so this was my first watch for it as well. But I do remember seeing this movie, the VHS cover, in the, you know, the VHS store. all the time. And I remember being horrified by it because, like, I had chronic asthma as a kid, and it's gotten a whole lot better. But as a kid, particularly when I was living, we were living in Alaska at the time, and I'm allergic to pine trees. So you put pine trees, Alaska, asthma, overweight kid who's trying to, like, go outside. And every time they wanted, like, gym class wanted us to go outside and run, I would come back almost dying because, like, I were running through the wilderness and there's fucking pine trees. And I'm not realizing because I was not diagnosed for having an allergy to pine trees. We found that out over a few years of Christmases where my parents were like, why is he always sick at Christmas time? And then it became like I found out. And so I would end up being rushed to, we lived in a small town, Eagle River, outside of Anchorage, about a 20-minute drive to Anchorage. That's where the big hospital was. And so when I was a kid and I would have an asthma attack, my parents would be rushing me to this big hospital in Anchorage to be put on their big ventilating inhaler type thing. And so I spent a lot of time in that chair taking, like, the little breathing in and trying to open up my lungs for a lot. So, like, I had a very fraught relationship with doctors my entire childhood because it was really bad. And then when I remember seeing this poster and seeing, you know, like, there was one tagline. There's a couple taglines for this movie, but one is, like, the doctor is insane or the doctor is out of his mind, right? So there's, like, all of this. And I kept thinking, I don't like doctors as it is. And this doctor is killing people. And I had no, like, foresight to know that this is a man who is not a doctor, who is pretending to be a doctor. But, like, in my mind, it was like this idea, like, I go see a doctor almost every week, it seems like. Yeah. And you're telling me the doctor could kill me? Like, that is what my little mind would come up with this entire time. And so I never saw this. However, I was also really big into comic books. And I saw that there was a comic book of Dr. Giggles, and that made me even more terrifying because the comic book cover from, like, in the early, I think there was, like, maybe a run of a couple comics, like three from Dark Horse, because this is a Dark Horse production.
Yeah.
And
oh, that's right.
They made a comic afterwards, and the comic covers were pretty, pretty gnarly. And so I remember seeing that. And so in my mind, I'm seeing the comic book cover of, like, this really kind of gross cover. And I don't exactly remember what it was, but I think there was, like, blood and maybe someone was decapitated or someone had cut open.
Oh, someone doesn't have a head. Oh, yeah.
Yep, that's what it was. Mm-hmm. And I remember seeing that before I saw the movie. And so I put the two and two together. And I was like, this is horrifying. I can never see this movie. Here we are. I'm 42 and I finally have seen Dr. Giggles.
Okay, one of the covers is him just, like, sewing someone's eyeball shut. That's horrific.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah.
But horrific.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that's really interesting, and thank you for sharing a little bit about your experience as a kid.
Of course.
Because I think that one of the things that's so interesting to me about these types of films is that we're really, like, getting into, like, the, the trope of, like, the mad doctor, the mad scientist.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's something that is still so interwoven in our society, a fear of doctors, of science, mm-hmm. of that kind of medical advancement and progress, because there's a, kind of built into the dad's plot line. The Dr. Giggs origin is truly a film in and of itself.
It really is.
You could make that movie and it would be something.
I'd watch that prequel, honestly. I'm not a big prequel person, but maybe that one I might watch.
Because it goes from 0 to 70 in about 4 seconds. and it's, again, a doctor that starts out well-intended and is super smart and amazing and has these really fantastic ideas and is going to revolutionize cardiology and cardiac surgery. And then his wife gets sick. And he then decides that could continue on that path, or I could just kill a lot of people and take out their hearts. I take option B. and I'm going to teach my son the ways. Yeah. And I don't know. There's something really, really interesting about that kind of aspect of seeing a doctor start out fine and then murder doctor.
What I do love about those flashbacks is that in particular, like when the very first time we get a flashback and it's little Evan, little Dr. Giggs, cutting open his teddy bear and doing like surgery on his teddy bear, and the father comes home, I was like, oh, is this going to be one of those things where father was a doctor and was abusive to the kid, and the kid told him, you're never going to be a doctor, and this is why we have him going on a killing spree? Is that what's going on here? And I was so happy to see that it sidesteps that very obvious trope for one in which they have a really caring relationship. It's weird to say, considering that the father is a murderer and puts his kid inside the body of his wife for him to escape. Like, it's horrifying and it's twisted, but they have such a nice relationship that I was really surprised, because I was literally about ready to, as I was typing my notes, ready to write, oh God, here we have another abuse story of a father who's mean to his son, and that's why his son has turned fucked up. And that's not what we get here. And I do like the idea.
What we get is even more fucked up, which is,
I mean, it really
incredible.
Is
incredible. But like, it's amazing. You know what I mean? Like, they took it a step further to a place where you're like, you know what's even fucking scarier? That they were like BFFs while they were doing it. And like, I love that. And again, but and it also like shows a different kind of relationship between a father and son that's not like horrendously abusive. So once again, Dr. Giggles.
Yeah, and I also, then you get into the whole connective tissue of why he's obsessed with this teenager, because she has the same heart condition as his mother, and he will be the one to save her. And so he doesn't, I don't know, like, there's some hemming and hawing about, like, I don't want to kill her. I just want to fix her. And I'm like, no, you pretty much want to kill her. But we'll watch it because it will be entertaining. And you're going to have some puns.
We are going to have a lot of puns. But the other thing with that whole situation that I found really refreshing is the fact that he doesn't seem to have, like, it's not a sexual thing for her. Mm-hmm. Because when I was reading, all I knew is what I saw as a kid, and then reading the IMDb synopsis, which we shared, where it says becomes infatuated with a teenage girl. When you use those words, an older man is infatuated with a teenage girl, I thought we're gonna have another sleazy, kind of gross type.
That's
of
also
situation.
What I was expecting. I was like, oh Jesus Christ, a movie from 1992 with a teen, like. Great.
And that's not what we get.
I love being wrong. I love being wrong.
Me too. Because it's all because his mom died from a heart condition. And in his mind, he wants to fix her because he couldn't fix his mom and his mom died. And that's really tragic. And I will say, this is a Universal movie. This is a Universal monster movie from the 1990s. Yeah. This is their attempt to do another Universal monster movie, because it has a similar sort of like tragicness to him. He's a little bit sillier, but if you really think about it, it's basically like Frankenstein, and he's trying to create his Frankenstein's monster, and the villagers have turned against him and his father. Like, this is a Frankenstein story here. We have another Universal monster movie from 1992.
Yeah.
Case closed.
I can't drop my mic, but I'm dropping my mic.
Pack it up. We're done.
That's a really brilliant, I think, take on it. Because, yeah, especially with the dad is killed by the townspeople.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's been killing people and taking out their hearts.
I mean,
yeah. It's kind of like, you know, that's not great.
Might have had it coming.
Yeah,
however.
But, like, you killed my mom. And he's like, yeah, but my wife died. So I win. It's a really interesting way to kind of lay that foundation. And it does take it to different places. You do get, like, the friend characters that are really nothing in the movie. If there's like a real pain point, I think those characters do so little and mean so little to the actual story that, like, we literally don't get any sense of, like, our main final girl's dynamic with really any of them.
Yeah. I know Roger Ebert has like got a lot of flack for you for the pejorative term of saying it's a dead teenager movie, but this is literally a dead teenager movie where the teenagers do not have any character. They do not really have any agency. I don't even really believe that they're all really friends because of how mean they are to each other. Like, I'm like, this isn't a real friendship. This is, I don't know what this is. And I always watch these movies and I'm like, thank God my friend group is not like this. Because like, they fucking don't seem to care about anyone. They get locked in that. Two of them get locked in the room, and I don't really know why that happened. Like, it doesn't even seem like that funny of a joke. Are you trying to like force a situation between the two of them? What is happening? Why did you pickaxe them into this closet in this old creepy house that, by the way, reminded me of the Freddy Krueger's house, well, Nancy's house, and later episodes where it's all run down and it's boarded up and everything, like. These aren't real friends. And I think that always like bugs me in a lot of these movies where we do have friendships where I'm like, in real life, you would not be friends because they don't even have that sort of like frenemy vibe. It's just they're just rude to each other. There's like no connection.
Yeah, it's almost like they don't even know each other, really. Mm-hmm. And everyone except for kind of that main couple, you know, they're basically just sent off to die. And play that out. And I don't know. I think that it take a little bit of time and actually create some relationships. Have a couple of scenes where the people are together and they're having conversations. We're learning a little bit about the history of their relationships. Because then it makes the kills, I think, a little bit more zingy. They mean something a little bit more as opposed to just a dead teenager thing. Now it's all pinned on how awesome Dr. Giggles can make it. And he does make it awesome all the time.
He really does.
But he's working so hard. He's working so hard.
He's carrying this entire movie on his back.
Yeah, I was gonna say, carrying this movie on his back. Because again, I was like, this is one of those movies where I was like, where's Dr. Giggles? Like, where's the kill? Like, I don't... Like, especially when they go into the house and it's like... Is it three couples or two couples?
In the house, there's two couples.
Mm-hmm. There's the couple that's a black woman and a black man. And guess what? They're killed first. Great. Love that stereotype. But like, again, we don't really know who these people are. They're just there to like get stuck in the house, get ready to fuck, and then get murdered. Like, very quickly. And it's just, it's a vehicle for Dr. Giggles. And you know what? That's okay.
I'm not mad about it, but...
It's true. Like they do make it seem like they want there to be more of a like attention with like her, like her boyfriend cheating on her with this other girl and all of that. And I was like, I don't care about that. Like, I don't really know. I barely know anyone's name. Like, I don't really know who any of you are. Like, I don't care about that drama as much. And that to me was when I was like, you missed the mark on that one, maybe a little.
Yeah, and I think there's just with. All of the relationships in the film, I think it's just really kind of, a lot of them are just devices to get a kill.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I kind of agree that at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter because I don't think the film really presents itself as much more. I think, it wants you to think that there's these, you know, this interesting friend group that this girl has this really complicated relationship with her dad's new girlfriend.
Great
wife.
Point. That was barely addressed. There's like one scene where they're fucking in the house, which is like, what the fuck? And then when he leaves to go find, because her heart monitor is in the tank, and she's like, it's me or her. I'm like, she's a heart condition, bitch. Who are you?
What I love is that this is the one note. Sometimes I will go and I will bold things that I want to make sure so that if I'm skimming through my notes, I will key on it. The one thing I bolded on here was their conversation where her father says, she just lost her mother. And Tamara's response is, you just lost your wife. You adjusted. And I'm like,
I know.
What?
I mean, is she wrong? Is she wrong?
She's not. You're absolutely right. She's not wrong. But I'm just, it's like, it just opened up this avenue where it's like, yeah, I don't believe that this is actually real.
No, and I think it's not, it's very loosely kind of out there. I don't think it's super well defined, but she, our final girl, has the same, like, had maybe the same or a similar condition to her mom.
Yeah.
What is going on in this town, by the way, that we have like a lot of people with the same heart condition?
I know. Like, are we all related? Like, what's going on? Like, is there something weird going on here? Like, yeah. What the fuck is happening? Like, what's going on?
We need Aaron Brockovich to go do some
investigating
of water sources and all sorts of things, because it's not right. But it's not right. You would think too, like, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. And is kind of a thing for that father-daughter relationship. The dad just lost his wife to condition X. Now his daughter has it. And how that's gotta really fuck with you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Instead, he's like, well, sorry I didn't go to your doctor's appointment. I had to do spreadsheets. And now I gotta go fuck this person.
You bang my new girlfriend.
Yeah, but don't drink or have fun. Love you, bye.
Don't do what I do.
Yeah.
Isn't she, like, she comes in and she hears them having sex and she's like, cool, I just ruined everybody's plans. And I was like, oh, just want to hug her. Like, Jesus Christ, this poor girl. Before Dr. Giggles even decides to hyperfixate on her, she's just like,
yeah,
then that teenage angst. And they could go so much more into the teenage angst, but I feel it. I feel it with her character a little bit.
Yeah. And then you have the boyfriend that is just...
Fuck you. Gross. Go fuck yourself. And then at the end, when she kisses him, I yelled at my computer. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? And my husband, Steve, was like, what's going on? I'm like, she's fucking getting back with the guy who cheated on her because she couldn't fuck. What is this goddamn movie?
Okay, but it's Mark Healy from Roseanne. I had such a crush on this man.
I don't give a fuck.
I had such a crush on this man growing up. Because I hadn't seen this movie, but had seen Roseanne, where he is a character on it. And
not a great partner in that.
No, he's not a great partner.
As well. So, I think that that's kind of an interesting thing because in high school, you do define yourself by the, like, relationships in ways that you transition out of as you get older, or you hope that you do. And yet, not necessarily, because I had basically almost a very similar experience. I had my recent valve replacement, and, like, my partner was like, yeah, well, okay, it's been real. We had a good time.
And wow.
Yeah. Like, literally, I was home from surgery for, I think, just maybe a week, and they went on, like, a week and a half trip. Couldn't lift anything, was in a harness, but they're like, yeah.
Wow.
Gonna go on the trip and have fun, chilling. So, yeah, I mean, I kind of felt that sense of, like, it's teenage angst, especially with how it's zoned in on in the movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, just this whole, like, what the fuck does this even mean now? Like, am I just going to be this person now that is never going to find someone that is understanding, or I can have a conversation about this without them deciding to blow it off? And so I do think that, like, when she kind of catches him cheating, like, she's pissed off, but she's also just kind of, like, indifferent.
Mm.
She's so just, mm-hmm, like, cool. Like, another fucking thing. Like, great. Love that for me. Yeah. Yeah,
she's like, I knew it was happening. So, more, like, disappointed, but not surprised. Give.
Yeah.
So, it's... Yeah, that, like, I don't know, like, watching it now in my 40s, like, I thought it was, like, oh my god, this is so relevant to my life as, like, a teenager. Wild. Now I'm like, oh, fuck.
Yeah. Like,
why is this so? But, yeah, I found that really interesting, but I don't know. it would be interesting. This would be a film that I would love the idea of someone toying with a remake. Like, what would you do with it?
That would be.
I do want to mention and circle back to the kid cutting himself out of his mother, because
okay,
because this here's the thing. I have had a rough few weeks at work, and last night I was trying to watch this movie and I was very distracted. And so there was one point where, like, I was on my phone and I looked up to see hands coming out of a woman's stomach, and I was like, what did I miss?
Yeah.
What did I miss? And so I had to, like, rewind, and I was, like, transfixed at this kid giggling and literally pulling himself out of his mother's naked, dead corpse. And then you find out later that he sews her back up and escapes when Magruder wakes up. And I'm like, this scene is horrifying, kind of hilarious in a darkly comedic sense of things, but it is so unlike anything else in this movie that I was like, what the fuck?
Well, and I love how the cop has, like, lived with this moment for so long.
That's an indelible, talk about scarred for life moment. That is an indelible scarred for life moment for that cop, for that person.
It is, but he has some very interesting ways of dealing with it, of conveying the story to his partner, and
who no one believes and has the whole thing, like, solved immediately, and no one wants to believe him.
But that's how it is. He's like, oh, by the way, here's everything that you need to know. And they're like, but we have, like, 70 more minutes.
There's so much more movie to have. There's so much more to experience.
Exactly. But yeah, his fixation on it is so funny to me, because he just is like, it's like his Moby Dick. It's his.
it's his white whale.
I will find Dr. Giggles and I will kill Dr. Giggles. And because of the moment that has completely fried my brain. Yeah, that he's such an entertaining character. And I think you spend just enough time with them.
Yes.
That it doesn't really feel like it's diverting any of the fun. But you're just like, oh, also, the townspeople have been living with this and they're still, you know, a little pissed.
I also just love the fact that this kid escapes, is never seen again in Mor Hai, ends up in a mental institution, and no one knows that it's this, that these are the two people.
Don't worry. It's okay.
And I'm just... I was sitting there spending way too much time, Mary Beth, trying to figure out.
You or me.
What is the logistics of this?
You
pulled
me.
I did pull
it.
You
pulled a Mary Beth, which is so funny, because for this, I was like, I immediately was like, nope. We switched places because I was like, nah. As soon as at the beginning where I saw, like, him in the surgery, like, in the surgery theater with the other patients licking the windows, I was like, nope. We're done. We're going to suspend any kind of logic. At one point, someone thinks he's getting a massage or a hug and he lifts the hands up. I was like, great. No, I don't care. Nope. Logic. Fuck that. Nope. And I was in. I was like, everything.
I want, like, a Mythbusters episode to, like, let's explore this child sewn in.
I was not sure how he got in, and that I did think about a little bit too hard, because I was like, wait, she doesn't look like it, but you would be able to tell if there was a small child inside of the body.
He wasn't a small child. Like, he seemed like
he's like 10. He's a decent sized child. Yeah, I did think about that, and I was like, nope, gotta stop it. Don't try.
Did they scoop out all of her innards? Like, what?
How did they not feel that when they lifted her up? Like,
right.
You would be able to see
him. Oh, she had a big meal. Like, what? What?
But, like, he's so big.
Well, there's no point. And her stomach looks just distended. You know, it didn't even look like she was a bigger person or was even pregnant.
No!
It was literally distended. I'm like, how did we miss this? Well, you all kind of deserve this if we are missing this kid.
Small towns,
baby. Did he not move for like a period of time?
Like,
how was he breathing? Did they poke holes somewhere for like
ventilation? I want to talk to that actor so bad who had to emergeth, give birth to himself basically in a weird, like have his own birth, his own C-section. Like, that was a child, like a naked child. I was like, what's it like? And he's covered in viscera. I'm like, this movie, incredible. What is it? What is happening?
Like, how do you prep a kid for that? Be like, all right, so this is the scene where you cut yourself out of your dead mom. Think of it
you're gonna
like
be
a
slathered
rebirth.
In blood. You're going to be giggling like you're insane. Like, just lost it, everything.
Going.
You're just excited to be here.
Pay no attention to her breast as a kid.
Yeah, it's a good time. But yeah, none of that made sense. So I want a Mythbusters to really explore. How do we, like, what are the components of this? Because that, to me, is the upsetting element of that scene. Is like, this is not Tom Six medically accurate business.
Nicholas Mastrandeya, if you are listening to this podcast, please send us an email at scarredforlifepodcast@gmail.com and let us know what it was like filming this, because he only has two credits to his name, Young Evan and Dr. Giggles, and then a character named Hal in Homeward Bound, The Incredible Journey. Like, these are his only two credits in 1992 and 1993. So please, Nicholas, if you are scouring the podcast and you come across, ooh, Dr. Giggles, and I want to listen to it, please get in touch with us. We would love to have a conversation with you, because I got to know.
And I have a wild assumption about what he would say has scarred him for life. Why? I have hypothesis.
Yep.
And I think we've talked about it. I think he would be like, that was really fucked up, but I got paid for it.
Oh, so I wonder if this is... So I just Googled him, and there's a LinkedIn profile, and there's a Nicholas Mastrandeya, who is a PhD director, field medical affairs.
He is Dr. Giggles.
Yeah. And I am so curious to know if this is him.
Oh my God.
He is Dr. Giggles.
He became Dr. Giggles.
He experienced this and then went on to be a doctor.
I want to just like, give me stats. This is on him. This is him. This
oh my
is
God,
him.
We found
Under
him.
Organizations, Screen Actors Guild, performer, October 1993. As a child actor, I appeared in two major motion pictures. The first is Dr. Giggles, followed by Homeward Bound. This is him. I have found him, and I want to reach out to him.
All right. Here we go. Great. Can't wait.
That's horrifying.
Wow. Well, on that incredible note, do we want to wrap this up and give this a rating out of 5? I don't think we can top that, honestly.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Expect an email from me, Nicholas.
Big fan of the pod, I bet. All right. So, Terry, how many bad medical puns out of 5 do you give Dr. Giggles?
Like, here's the thing. This is not a good movie, and yet this is a good movie. Like,
yes! Yes!
I don't know how to say it. Like, there are moments in this. The scene that I honestly think is going to be stuck in my head forever is me looking up and seeing the two bloody hands coming out of the woman's body and going, wait, what did I miss? Like, that for me is going to be an indelible image that I will come back to and will probably haunt my dreams for who knows how long. This movie's weird. I had a good time watching it. I was a little bit distracted in spots. It's a little slow in spots, but like, I think it's fun. It knows what it wants to be. I think it got unfairly maligned by critics who probably didn't know. I think there's a weird angle between like when things are horror and they're comedy. And the response to this on some of the, like, at that time, reviews were, like, kind of mixed about that. And I don't know. I think this is a lot of fun. I'm surprised that this was a movie that was released in theaters. I was surprised to see that it was released by Universal Pictures, because this does not feel like a movie that Universal Pictures would have released. And for that, I have to give them credit. I'm going to give it 3, I think. Bad medical puns. I had fun with this one. Maybe 3.5 if I'm feeling generous. Just cut like one of those arms that he uses in the beginning to give a massage and throw it in there too. Why not? But that's me. What about you, Mary Beth?
I don't know. I love this movie. I'm going to give it 4. I just was really jiving with, I was very much picking up what it was putting down in terms of ridiculousness. It commits to the bit in a way that I really respect. And yeah, it is very much just another dead teenager movie. And there are, it's slow in spots and it's weird as hell, but I don't know. I just like had a real good time watching it and was really entertained, and the kills are really good. And I just think it, for the most part, knows what it is, and I really just had a great time watching how absolutely ridiculous this movie is. So I gotta give it a 4. Nicole, you have the final word. How many bad medical puns out of 5 do you give Dr. Giggles?
I give it 15 out of 5.
Hell yeah!
I think especially because it created a real Dr. Giggles. Like,
yep.
Sue me for defamation, Nicholas. Prove it.
Come for me. Yeah, I need the receipts.
Show me your patient logs. And tell me where they are. Because I am doubtful. So that's incredible to me. No, I love this movie. I think it is exactly what you guys have hit on. I think horror comedies oftentimes are polarizing because I don't think people can really sit with where they want to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with a film like Dr. Giggles, you just kind of have to set aside any of like your wants or needs of,
yep,
you know, a really good film and be like, what ride are we going on today? And I think it's great. Yeah, I love it.
Hell yeah. Well, thank you so much, Nicole, for joining us and introducing us to Dr. Giggles.
And they also thank you for sharing so many like stories about how this affected you due to your own experiences. Like, thank you so much for sharing all those stories with us. Like, I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Where can our listeners find you? And what do you have to plug for your podcast? What is an episode that you think people, and you cannot say Mary Beth's episode, what's an episode you think people need to go listen to?
That is a great question. So I would say that one episode that I really enjoyed doing was talking about the movie Hush and the movie A Quiet Place.
Mm.
I feel like I am in a minority in that I absolutely hate Hush.
Oh.
I do not like it. I'll give a little bit and say that I think it has moments that are impactful as just this home invasion type film, but the way that it handles disability is something else. So I did that episode to kind of talk about like why it's important and why I think it's really great that we're seeing now more disabled actors taking on these roles, because Millie from A Quiet Place had voiced her disapproval of Hush and said, you know, for A Quiet Place, it was really great because I felt really integrated into the process. Mm-hmm. And, mm-hmm. you know, we were really concerned about like the sign language being accurate, you know, and I got to kind of lead that because it was truly a thought by the filmmakers. So I thought that was kind of an interesting exploration there. So, yeah.
Okay, cool. And where can people find you?
Oh, you can find me at Anatomy of a Scream. I also am now occasionally one of the hosts over at the Alter Tapes.
Yeah.
So talking about a bunch of short films, which is very interesting because it is absolutely, I think, mind-blowing and very underappreciated how filmmakers can cram so much in an incredibly short runtime.
And then any socials to tag for people to follow you?
Oh, yeah. I am on Twitter, Twixt, X, as Bodies Horror. I'm also on Blue Sky, at Bodies of Horror. I checked that. I gotta get into the habit of checking that more.
Yeah, so do I. I'm really bad about checking it.
Yeah, I have made sure finally that my notifications are on, so I actually see if something is happening. So I feel like we're taking steps. I'm just not very social media. It's very taxing sometimes. So.
Oh yeah. I get it. Oh yeah.
But yeah, that's where you can find me online.
Cool.
Hell yeah.
Sweet. Well, listeners, you've heard from us. We want to hear from you. Tell us about your experience watching Dr. Giggles, this incredible underrated movie that I now want everyone to see. You can send us an email at scarredforlifepodcast@gmail.com, especially if you are the actor that we want to get in touch with. Or you can follow us on Twitter. I'm at MB McAndrews.
And I'm at Gailey Dreadful.
And of course, don't forget to follow the podcast on Twitter at Scarred Podcast, and also on Instagram and Blue Sky at Scarred for Life Podcast.
And please don't forget to review, rate, and subscribe. And if you want to help support us, we are on Patreon.
I don't know if you can hear my cat purring really fucking loud, but thank you to Eric Power for our artwork. Thank you to Sean Keller for our music. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Please stay safe out there, but most importantly, stay creepy.
And until next time.